Bob and Anne went out to dinner Thursday night. They discussed the computer virus that had been going around the internet. Cliff Stoll had called Bob that morning and told him about it, but Bob had been too busy with other things to spend too much time thinking about its origins. At 11:30 p.m., the phone rang. Bob was already in bed. Anne answered. She was surprised to hear Robert's voice. Ben frequently called this late, but not Robert. "Can I talk to Dad?" he asked. "He's asleep," Anne told him. "Is it important?" From the tone in Robert's voice, she already knew it was. "Well, I'd really like to speak to him," came the reply. He was as insistent as she had ever heard him. She called Bob to the phone. It was a short conversation between father and son. When he heard what Robert had done, Bob was perturbed but not angry. Robert told his father he already had a plane ticket to Philadelphia for the following day. He had been planning to spend the weekend with his friend Janet. Bob told him to use the ticket, not to talk to anyone, and not to tell anyone where he was going. It was likely he would need legal advice. When Anne went to work the following day, the staff were milling in the coffee room talking about the computer virus. They barely knew what Anne's husband did for a living, much less her children. Tables were strewn with newspapers, all with news of the virus prominently displayed. Queasy and unable to concentrate, Anne left work early. By late that afternoon, the New York Times had figured out that Robert was the author of the virus and was planning to run the story in the paper the following morning. Anne and Bob spent the afternoon looking for an attorney. By the end of the day, they had several names. If Paul hadn't kept talking to the New York Times, there would have been more time for the family to figure out what to do, but Paul's careless slip about Robert's login had accelerated the pace of events. Author of Computer Virus is son of NSA expert on data security, was Saturday's front-page headline in the New York Times. The paper hadn't been able to get a photograph of Robert in time, but the following day photographs of both father and son appeared. Bob looked the very picture of an eccentric scientist. His long, untrimmed, graying beard complemented his eyebrows, whose arch resembled birds in flight. Hair all but covered his craggy face. Even with the presidential election coming up the following Tuesday, the media had an insatiable appetite for the story of the young computer whiz, son of a computer security expert, who loosed a rogue program on a nationwide network and brought it to its knees. By Sunday morning, a crowd of television and newspaper reporters had settled at the end of the Morris driveway, where they would remain on and off throughout the weekend and into the following week. The telephone inside rang ceaselessly with calls from the press. Bob's sense of humor stayed sharp when a friend called and opened the conversation with, "This is not a press call." Bob responded, "Oh, then you must have the wrong number." It seemed wise for Robert to remain in Philadelphia and steer clear of his parents' house and the pack of journalists. So on Sunday, Bob and Anne drove to Philadelphia to retrieve him. On their way back, they pulled off the highway for gas, and Bob got out of the car. Just then, a red sports car pulled up alongside the gas pumps, and the driver glanced at Bob. A wide grin spread across his face as he took a longer look. "Hey," he called out, "you a computer scientist?" The nation's press corps fastened onto the story first as an incident that had disrupted a network of military computers, then as the identity of the culprit emerged, as the story of a remarkable family and of an intellectual pranksterism gone awry. For several days in a row, it was front-page news in the nation's newspapers and one of the top stories in television newscasts. By Monday, every newspaper in the country, it seemed, was already writing editorials. Mike Royko, the acerbic Chicago Tribune columnist, called for a stiff prison sentence. Journalists tapped every computer security expert and computer industry executive they could find. The McNeil-Lehrer News Hour interviewed Ken Olson, president of Digital Equipment Corporation. Even though Digital's computers had been a target not just of this incident, but of hackers with more felonious intent, Olson urged the computer science community not to respond by placing increased security on computer networks. "The worst thing that could happen," Olson said, "is that we clamp down on the free flow of academic information, because that should be preserved at all costs." When Robert's name first came out, some of those who knew him well weren't terribly surprised. Bob's old Dell Labs friend, Doug McIlroy, got up early Saturday morning and read the news. The slumbering McIlroy family was awakened by a booming, "Guess who did it?" There was already a story circulating among computer scientists that as the virus was knocking on the door at Bell Labs, some of the old Unix hands were chuckling among themselves, saying, "Must be Morris's kid." But others who knew Robert, even those who had been on the receiving end of some of his Harvard pranks, were incredulous, or at least willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. One Harvard faculty member, who knew Robert well, was hoping that he had released the virus on a small local area network at first, had gone home, and had returned the next morning to find that it had somehow spread out over the internet. Another faculty member, whose courses Robert had taken, shook his head in disbelief and asked, "Why didn't he simulate it first?" Andy, Paul, and David Hendler, in the meantime, sat in Andy's office at Aiken, discussing ways to protect their friend. Cooking up a bit of propaganda campaign, the group wanted to see the press describe Robert in the best possible light. Paul was enjoying his role as spin doctor on the story. He told the others that he had repeatedly described Robert to the Times reporter as brilliant, and the reporter had used that description in his story. As they were sitting there, Robert called. He didn't tell them where he was. He said he just wanted to check in. "What are you doing?" David asked when he got on the line. "Baking cookies to send to friends," Robert replied.